Okay, chapter 16 of Job, we'll start in verse 1. Then Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. Shall vain words have an end, or what emboldens you that you answereth? I also could speak as you do. If your soul were in my soul's stead, I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you. But I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips would assuage your grief. Though I speak, my grief is not assuaged, and though I forbear, what am I eased? But now he has made me weary. Thou hast made desolate all my company, and you have filled me with wrinkles, which is a witness against me, and my leanness rising up in me bears witness to my face. He tears me in his wrath, who hates me. He gnashes upon me with his teeth. My enemy sharpens his teeth upon me. They have gaped upon me with their mouth. They have smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They have gathered themselves together against me. God has delivered me into the ungodly and turned me over unto the hands of the wicked. I was at ease, but he has broken me asunder. He has also taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces and set me up for his mark. His archers compass me round about. He cleaves my reins asunder and does not spare. He pours out my gall upon the ground. He breaks me with breach upon breach. He runs upon me like a giant. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin and defiled my horn in the dust. My face is foul with weeping, and my eyelids is the shadow of death. Not for any injustice on my hands, also my prayer is pure. O earth, cover not thou my blood, and let my cry have no place. Also now, behold, my witness is in heaven, and my record is on high. My friends scorn me, and my eye pours out tears to God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God, as a man pleads for his neighbor. When a few years are come, then I shall go to the way whence I shall not return. Reading that King James English will shake anybody's mind up, believe me. But what is God trying to tell us in this? Who is Job? Everybody should say me, because that's who Job is. It's your life. If I'm walking in the course that God has set for me, I will be able to relate to this. Early in my walk, I had a man that, I won't mention the names or anything, but this man got on me because I kept referring to, this is the same thing that happened to Jesus in his walk. He said, who are you to compare yourself to Jesus? And I said, who am I supposed to compare myself to? You? To another man? No. He was the pattern. He was the goal set that I was supposed to follow. He was the pattern I was supposed to pattern myself after. So that's what we have to do. We have to pattern ourselves after him. Job was set here for us to see the mistakes. If we're very wise and we really apply ourselves to this and God shows us this truth, we can avoid a lot of the pitfalls of life. Do you realize that? Now, it doesn't mean you won't have any troubles, but you'll have the understanding to bypass those things. Jesus said, follow me, didn't he? If I follow his course, did he get out of anything? But did he have the power to get through it? There's the key. I'm going to go through things, but I'm going to have the power and authority to walk through them unscathed. I'll be all right. It's okay. Paul, in his writing, said, mark them who follow Christ and follow them. So there's a way. If I follow Christ, it's going to be actually hard, but it's going to be easier. Does that make sense? It's going to be hard to follow Christ. True. But it's going to be easier than going on my own course, because that's going to be total destruction. So Job is going on to respond with his friends here, okay? And Job says, he said, then Job responded and said, I have heard what? Many such things. The word heard here is shama. He said, I've heard with the intent to respond many things. Miserable comforters are all you. He's saying, what you had to say to me was not godly. You were giving me opinions, giving me attitudes, but you didn't tell me how to deal with my situation in ways that were fruitful in my life. That's what he's telling them. You didn't tell me how to work through this thing. You were telling me you're wrong, you're doing bad things, you're a sinner, you got all these bad things on you because you're a bad person. Isn't that what the religious world does to us? Every time we got a problem, well, must be a devil doing it. You must be in some kind of sin, brother. What, sister, what are you into? Have you all heard that? Oh, I've heard it many times. I was in an industrial accident, had my back injured. And I had, quote, men of God come to me and say, what sin are you in? Now, you would not have been injured if you hadn't been in sin. I think Jesus' teaching clarifies this. He talked about the 18 who were killed at the Tower of Siloam that the tower fell on. He asked them and said, do you think those men were more sinful than anybody else? He didn't even wait for an answer from them. He said, I tell you, no, they were not. God had a purpose for what went on. And see, God's got a purpose for everything he puts on. And now I look back, when I got hurt, I didn't think it was very funny. But now I can look back and see that God used that to slow me down so I could hear what he was saying. And you know what? I wouldn't trade my health in the physical body that I lost for what I have in the spirit. And it ain't going to happen. I mean, I'd love to have my health back, but I don't care, because what I've got is so much far more valuable than what my natural body could give me. No comparison. So I'm satisfied where I'm at. It's okay. And he gives me the strength to endure. So the pain, like I say, I see pain now as my friend. It just tells me when I got to quit. I don't get bullheaded and try to do something I can't do anymore. I just quit. And when I can do it again, then I go ahead and go with it. Verse 3. Shall vain words have an end? Now this word vain here is incorrect, and I mean incorrect in the worst way. The word vain here is the word ruach, 7307 in your Strong's Dictionary. You know what that word is? Spirit. Ruach is spirit. Shall spiritual words have an end? There's a question there, isn't there? Shall they ever have an end? Will there ever come an end to the spirit? Or what presses or irritates you that you respond? He's saying to them, what are you responding for? What's pressing you or irritating you so much that you respond to what I said? He said, I could also speak as you do if your soul were in my soul's place. Have we all been there? Somebody giving us advice that's never walked in our shoes? Real easy to condemn somebody and find fault with somebody when you've not walked in their place. It's very easy to point the finger. Very easy. But I want to ask you a question. Did Jesus point the finger at anybody? See? There again, there's that pattern you got to look at. Do I have a right to point a finger at somebody else when I myself is guilty of the same thing? And if you're pointing a finger, it tells me you're still living under the law. And the book says, if you live under the law, you are what? Cursed. And if you violate one part of the law, what are you guilty of? The whole law. So even though I never killed anybody, per se, murdered someone, if I lied, what am I guilty of? Murder, adultery, fornication, name it all. See, if I do one thing, and I'm living under that concept in my mind of do and don't do, the law, which Jesus fulfilled in himself in Matthew 5:17, he said, I came to fulfill the law, not to destroy it. I fulfilled it. Okay, so if he fulfilled the law is not in effect anymore. We're under a new covenant, the covenant of grace. So that doesn't, it's not in effect. But if somebody tries to put you back under by telling you, you must do this for God or you must not do that because of God, what are you living under? The law. So if I'm living under the law and I make one mistake, what am I guilty of? The whole law. And that's as true today as it was back then in my understanding. If I'm still living under the law, I feel guilty. Okay? But when I'm eating from that tree of knowledge and good and evil, it's quick to point that finger, and it tells you you're under the law when you point that finger. You should hear what I'm saying. It'll tell you, if you point the finger, you're the one living under the law. He said, I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you. What would that mean? What's somebody shaking their head at you for? Mocking. It's a mocking thing. They'd wag their head back and forth and mocking somebody. That's what they did in that culture. Okay, it's a mocking thing. He said, I should strengthen you, or I could strengthen you, or I would strengthen you with my mouth. He said, if I'm doing it, I would be strengthening you. And moving of my lips would what? Relieve or refrain the grief that you have. See, he's saying if you're comforters, you're miserable. because you're not giving me any relief from the grief that I'm sitting under. I've lost my family. I've lost all my possessions, everything I had except my wife. He probably wished at a time or two that he'd lost her too, from the way she talked to him. But still, he said, you know, I've lost everything, and you're coming here to comfort me, and all you're doing is multiplying my grief. You're condemning me. See? So when we go to help somebody in grief, are we there to condemn and point out their faults, or are we there to try to exalt them and lift them up a little bit? See? Encouragement. We should be sons of encouragement to help someone, not to condemn them. Okay? And we learn from Mama Church how to condemn real well, you know, because she's the first one to teach you how to point the finger. Okay? Okay, verse 6. Though I speak, my grief is not assuaged. And this word grief here says it's suffering mental or physical. See, it could be physical, but it could be mental. And you know, I can say most of my suffering truly is mental. The physical, you can deal with. Pop a pain pill and it's gone. But what will change your mind? The gospel. Though my grief is not, what? Refrained. And though I forbear, what am I eased? He said, though my grief is not refrained, and though I forbear or put up with it, what am I eased? He said, did that change anything? Still didn't change anything. See, I need to hear something to encourage me to get over this hump that I'm, this battle, to overcome this thing that's in front of me, this situation in my life. I need to hear something. He said, you guys haven't given me anything to help me. He said, but now he's made me weary. And you have made desolate or devastated all my company or all my family. Said, you've devastated my whole family. You haven't come to help me a bit. But yet in the name of friends, they came to comfort him. Right? They didn't do it. They come under the law in religion. And you have cut me down, which is, the word says filled me with wrinkles. That's not the good translation of it. It should be, you have cut me down, which is a witness against me. So he's saying, you've knocked me off my feet in front of everybody. Here I was, a very wealthy man, very prosperous, lots of kids, lots of animals, you know, had everything going, and you took me to the dust with his tongue, by the words of his mouth. He took him down. Now, he's talking about what God did. Cut him down. God took everything away from him. Okay? And all they have done is what? Cut me down with their tongue, that they have done. And says, it's a witness against me and my leanness, or my failures of the flesh, or hypocrisy rising up in me bears witness to my face. He said, my frailties of my flesh and the hypocrisies in me bear witness with my face. So what was he saying about his face? His countenance showed the situation he was in. Remember what I said earlier today? People ask me all the time, how are you today? And I say, outstanding. Because they can't tell by my face if I'm suffering. I'm not lying. I'm not hiding anything. I'm just telling my flesh to shut up because my flesh doesn't rule my life. My spirit rules my life. So I don't worry about the rest of it. God will take care of it. He's took care of it all these years. Why should I worry now? Why should I start doubting God after all these years? He's covered me in everything that I could pass through. Why should I begin to doubt God now? I mean, that'd be stupid on my part to now doubt God after he's carried me all these years. He tears me in his wrath. Who what? That word hate, you know what it really means? It means persecutes or retaining animosity against me. He said, the one who retains animosity towards me or persecutes me tears me in his wrath. He gnashes upon me with his teeth. My enemy not sharpens his teeth, but he sharpens his eyes, but he literally says he glares at me in what he's doing. Do you ever hear somebody look at you and give you that look? Oh, I could get you. Oh, if I could get to you, I'd get you, you know. That's what he's talking about. The people that have animosity towards you, they can't hide the fact that they don't like you. You understand what I'm saying? If you don't like somebody, it's going to show. If you do love someone, it's going to show. Do you understand what I'm saying? You can't hide what's truly in your heart, because what's in a man's heart is what's going to come out of his mouth. It's going to show in his countenance, isn't it? They have gaped upon me with their mouth. They have smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They have gathered themselves together against me. Didn't the high priest smite somebody on the cheek? Who was it? Mm-hmm. Paul was also a type of who?
Christ.
Didn't Jesus get hit in the face? Sure he did. So guess what you're going to get? Is that physical? Yeah, maybe, but I'm really concerned with the spiritual side of it. We'll get knocked down, I guarantee you. They have gathered themselves together against me. Did they not do that to Jesus? To every other man or woman of God that he has chosen to walk in a place that most people don't understand? And because they don't understand you, what do they do with you? They try to kill you one way or another, physically or with their tongues. They will try to kill you. They'll try to ostracize you away from them because you're not like they are. Well, I'm proud that I'm not like they are. I really am. I'm proud I'm not like the world. I'm glad that God has chosen me for this. And it says, like I read in Romans a while ago, if he calls you, he'll do what? He'll equip you. He'll justify you. And he'll glorify you. No problem. How can you fail? How could you fail, Lloyd? It's an impossible thing. If God has called us, then what have we got to do with it? It's predetermined, isn't it? According to the book, it's predetermined. So we got nothing to worry about. So if I got nothing to worry about, then nobody ever should come in here with fear again, should they? Or concerns. He must increase. So we should never, ever worry about anything again, should we? Serious. I'm serious. We shouldn't really worry about anything because we're not in control of it. Yep. See how quick we'll reach back and grab that dust, grab a handful of that sand. You know, sand will go through your hand, you know, real easy. You can't get much grip on it. It gets hot sometimes in the sun. Hard to walk on. Verse 11. God. The word God here is not the normal word God. It's Elah. And it literally means the Almighty has delivered me into the ungodly. Who did? Who put you in the path of the Almighty? I mean, who put you in the path of the wicked? God did, the Almighty. See? So do you really think you set your course? When I first started going to church and people around me knew that I was not going to stay sitting in a pew someplace, they knew there was a call in my life. And even though they didn't know where I was going, they knew I was going. They knew they wasn't going to be able to control me. And they said, you need to get a vision. You need to get a goal, something set forth. You need to. I said, I don't understand that. Why should I set forth a vision or something, a projected future for something when I don't know what it is? And if God's already got it set, what am I supposed to do? My goals will only fail. If His is going to prevail, mine has to fail. So why should I set goals that are destined to fail? I don't have to fool with that stuff. So that's all that busyness, that carnality that the church world gets you set up in. You don't have to set goals. My goal has already been clearly set. It was predetermined before the foundation of the world. What do I care? Romans 8, we just read, He conformed us to the image of His Son before the foundation of the world. I don't have to worry about it. He'll take care of it. But the Almighty has delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over to the hands of the wicked. See? Let them have me. Did Jesus reject being taken by the or fight or struggle being taken by the Pharisees and the Sadducees and everybody? It was His time. And He knew it was God's plan to turn Him over. They're going to turn you over too. How are you going to react? Are you going to fight and kick? Or are you going to let God do what He wants to do? Because He's in control of that wicked one as much as He is the righteous one. See? That's a hard one for people to swallow. See? They can't let God take care of both sides of it. He said, look at verse 12. I was at ease. I was comfortable. And God came along and kicked me in the seat of the pants. How many of us has been there? Just everything was going. I was going to church, paying my tithes and praying an hour a day and reading every day. And God came along and upset the apple cart and just made everything turn to pure mush. How many get that? Well, see, usually when that happens, everybody says, oh, the devil's on the loose. Yeah. Thank God He got me out of my stinking thinking. He got me out of that rut I was living in. Thank God He got in there and stirred something up. He said, I was at ease, but He has broken me asunder. He has also taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces and set me up for His what? Target. He set me up for a target. Well, you know what a target gets? It gets arrows shot through them. In the book of Psalms, it says, the arrows of the Lord are within me. I've done been hit. How are you going to get away from them? You're not. If God sets you up as a target, you're going to get hit. What do you think happens to someone when they begin to preach the truth? You become a target and you get arrows coming from everywhere. But all it does is strengthen, because the book told me what was going to happen. There's no surprises to this. See, I could go out there. No, I couldn't. If I wanted to go out there and preach what the rest of the world's preaching, I could get out there and build me a big church and have everybody just love what I was saying. But I'd be lying to them. I can't do it. Can't do it. I don't have the ability to tell them those lies. Once I know the truth, I was talking with a lady yesterday, and she said, "You enjoy telling people the truth." And I said, "Yes, I do." Because she knows it stirs them up. I said, "I enjoy telling them. I really do. Because when I see turmoil in someone's life, I know God's working on them. When they're happy and at ease, like Job said, there ain't nothing going on in your life. God ain't doing nothing in your life. But when there's turmoil in your life, I know God's working in your life. Because I don't believe in that stupid thing they call the devil. I believe that being your carnal mind. That's the only accuser I have to deal with. Okay? The rest of them's up to God to take care of. But I do like to stir people up. I think Jesus did a pretty good job of it. I don't know what you think about that. He stirred them up so much they killed him. So what do you think? You think he was wrong? Was he wrong in what he did? He caused them to think, didn't he? They didn't like what they thought when they thought, so they killed him, got rid of the one that was provocative to them. But they couldn't do it until it was his time. That's the good thing. His archers surround me. He splits open my mind. That's what it literally says. He splits open my mind and does not spare. Thank God for that. I'm glad he split my mind open, and he does not spare. He poured out my bitterness upon the ground. Well, thank God for that, huh? If he poured out my bitterness, guess what's not in me no more? Bitterness. He split my mind open. I was told years ago, "You'd lost your mind, Dave." I said, "I know it. Thank God. I don't want to find that stinking thing again either. I found the mind of Christ. I don't want to go back to my old way of thinking." That might sound cute, but I'm telling you the truth. I don't want to go back there. Ezekiel said this. He said, "I'll give you a new heart. I'm going to take the old heart out." Well, if you have a heart transplant and they take that old dead heart out and put a new one in that works, what can I get out of that old one? I don't have the capacity. I'm not connected with it anymore. So if I have a heart transplant, a mind, and it's talking about your mind, how could I possibly think about hurting someone, lying to someone, cheating someone, stealing from them, murdering them? How could I possibly think that thing? Could you? If that part of my mind is severed off, thrown away, can't be there, it's been replaced with the mind of Christ, how could I possibly think those things? Is it possible? It's impossible. I can't even think that. But now I can be accused, you know. I can be accused, but I can't think it in myself. It comes into play. Until you get changed, the doubt and unbelief hasn't got anything to do with you. Until you've been changed. Verse 14. He breaks upon me with breaking, not breach, but breaking upon breaking. He runs upon me like a giant or a mighty warrior. What chance you got? What chance you got? Someone tell me. You got no choice. If he's going to break you with breaking upon breaking and run upon you like a giant or a mighty warrior, what chance have you got? None. All you can do is put up the flag. I surrender. I surrender. I'll no longer fight with him. I'll wrestle with him no more.
Whatever you want.
Amen. Yes. Whatever you want. That's what I'll give you, God. Verse 15. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin. What's he saying? I've humbled myself. Sackcloth represents humility. He said, I've humbled myself. I live in a humbled state now. And see, when he said he sewed it to his flesh, what's he saying? What's he saying when he says he sewed it to his flesh? He means he attached humility to this body, and this body is going to be in humility. Hasn't got a choice, because now it's covered with humility. Okay? And defiled, or the word defiled literally, and thrust my horn into the dust. Horn speaks of what? Authority and strength. So he said, I have thrust my authority and my strength into the dust realm, the lowest realm. That's the pit, isn't it? It's Christ. I don't even exist any longer. See, Paul says, it's not I that live, but it's a Christ that lives within me. It's not I anymore. That's where we have to come to. Verse 16, my face is foul. Wrong word. It means reddened or flushed. From weeping, and my eyelids have the shadow of death. He said, I'm sick and tired of living. Anybody ever say that? I mean, you're just tired of this life. It wears on you. We all get there. Did it change anything? Murmuring and complaining didn't change a thing. And now look what he says in verse 17. He said, he tells you what's going on with him. But he said, not because any wrong on my hands or my part. Also, my prayer is pure. He's saying, this didn't happen because I did something wrong. He had some understanding. This happened because God wanted it to happen. If I never make a mistake, will I change? Okay? So he understands that. God put me in a situation where I would make a mistake. He knew the frailties of my flesh and my mind. He knew what I would do and get me in that position so God could show me right from wrong. God's in control. Did God condemn him for what he did? Did God show up and say on the scene and say, Job, you're a dirty, rotten sinner, and I'm going to fry you in hell for eternity? Didn't he say that anywhere? Well, the church world does that, but God doesn't say that anywhere. See, God knows that these are learning processes, that you learn by your mistakes, and this is a good thing. They're a gift of God. So he goes ahead and cries out, O earth, cover not my blood, and let my outcry have no place. So even though he says, don't listen to my screaming in my flesh, don't listen to it. He said, I know that I'm innocent. In that verse 17, when he said there was no wrongdoing in his hands, what was he saying? I'm not guilty of anything. You know, I've got that handout I pass out to people that says 40 things that God says you are. You're holy, you're righteous, you're innocent, you're not guilty, you're unaccusable, you're unblameable. Sons of God, righteous. All these things that God says about us is good that the preachers forget to tell you about. They try to hunt for something, and if they can't find something, they'll make it up and tell you, still, God's mad at you for what you did. And I can't see that at all. That's not God. Until they experience it, they can't preach it. Okay? There's a lot of people trying to preach this third day truth and this tabernacles. And until you walk there, you can't teach it. There's a whole lot of people trying, but there's no fruit in what they're preaching. They're still playing in the Pentecostal realms or the Passover realms, having their big meetings and doing all their things and trying to get important and trying to get a whole bunch of people together and try to raise a lot of money so that the preacher can have things nice. See, it's all about that. That's not what this is about. It's not about heaping things up. How much wealth did Jesus carry with him? Did he carry a couple credit cards and a lot of cash or anything? He said, let the thief carry the money. Who cares? If I need any money, I'll tell that fish to bring it to me. Right? He wasn't concerned with wealth because he knew his supply was in his Father. It wasn't in humanity. And I know the book says that through the bosom of men, he'll give to us. But God's in control of that, isn't he? So we don't worry about it. That's why we don't ask for anything around here. God will supply our needs according to his riches in Christ, which is unlimited. So why do I worry about anything? See, why should you worry about anything in your life? Lord, you've got every reason in the world to be in all kinds of fear and guilt and doubt and unbelief in your situation right now, but what good would that do you? Just give you some more headaches, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Don't need no more of that, do you? Just go on. God's going to provide. If he doesn't, then God isn't God, is he?
I've got to believe him.
You've got to believe him through everything.
Faith, hope, and love is what will remain, and love disagrees.
That's what he said. Love is the main thing. If you love him enough, it'll be all right.
Won't that'll prevail.
No matter what.
Yep.
Okay, where am I at? Left off. 19. Also now, behold my what? Literally it says evidence. Behold, my evidence is in heaven, and my witness is on high, which is basically saying the same thing. Just switch the words around. That's all it is. I don't know why they did it backwards, but they did. My witness is on high. Didn't he say to lay your treasures up in heaven where moths can't corrupt it and thieves can't break through and steal it? That's what he's telling us. He said, my friends scorn me, My eye pours out tears to the Almighty, to the one true God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with the one true God as Adam for his companion. That's what it says. Whoa. Did you hear what he said? Listen to what he said again. Let me read it just the way the language says it. Oh, that one might plead for a man with the one true God as Adam for his companion. Who was his companion? Eve. As Adam pleaded for Eve. Right there tells us he went after his woman, didn't he? See? He pleaded for her. And they hid that word Adam and companion in those other words. He says, when a few years are come, I shall go the way, I shall not return. And see, he said, I'll go the way. What way is it? Jesus said, I am the way. He said, in a few years, when they come, a few years come, I'll go the way. He didn't say one of the ways, did he? He went the way. There's only one way to go. That tells me reconciliation. Right back, like Solomon said, when in Ecclesiastes, when we die, the dust returns to the earth from where it came, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. And Job knew that. How did he know it? How did Job know this? This is the oldest book in the Bible. It was written in his heart before he was conceived in flesh. He said he wrote in our heart before the foundation of the world. Okay. Now, do you think Job is frustrated here? He's got a little frustration in his flesh, but he knows something. He's starting to see things in God. See, we're up to chapter 16. There's 42 chapters here. But he's starting to see some things with God. He's starting to realize that no matter what's going on, I'm still going to make it. I'm going to go where God wants me to go. And he realizes, I got some more things to go through. Oh, isn't that great to look forward to? Like we haven't had enough already? But see, God knows how much we got to go through. We can never judge ourselves honestly. Know this is the truth. I can't judge myself honestly, and you can't judge yourself honestly. We'll either beat ourselves up or we'll be too lenient on ourselves. But to hit the nail on the head, there's only one that can, and that's the Spirit of God. He will tell you exactly where you're at. And you know how he'll tell you? By putting you in circumstances that will make you express who you are. He will make you express to yourself who you are. You'll be in a place so bad you'll scream out. And you'll scream out in love, or you'll scream out in pain, one way or the other. You'll know who you are because God will prove it to you, because he's not trying to prove it to anybody else. Once he convinces you who you are, you'll never lose that. Once God reveals who you are to you, you will never forget it. No matter what anybody says about you, they'll never be able to convince you you're not who your Father told you. Remember what Jesus said in John 10? My sheep hear my voice, and the voice of another they will not follow. There's your confidence. Once you hear his voice, you don't have to worry about taking the other course anymore. It just means I got to endure to the end. That's good news. I'll give you the good news.